really quite historical and that really need a lot of attention and a lot of solidarity and a lot of love and a lot of care, because people's lives in the millions are being transformed. Just to finish off, one of the things that I wanted to mention, which I think is, you know, hugely important and perhaps is a topic for our discussion afterwards, is the whole issue of what they call in Venezuela now the La Unión Cívico Militar, the civilian military union that has emerged as of April 11th, 2002, especially. And it's, you know, there is a history in Latin America, there is precedence in Latin America, whether it's Torrijos or Velasco Alvarado in Peru in the 60s, Torrijos in the 70s in Panama, you know, even Noriega in his post-CIA days. You know, there are examples of military regimes in Latin America that have actually been progressive, that have been focused on social justice. And I think that there's a very interesting thing that has happened between the military in Venezuela. It's a very unique thing that's happening. We try to compare it often with things that have happened in other parts of Latin America or the world, but I think it's quite unique. And to see the rank and file especially, to see, you know, what I witnessed a month ago, the love that people have for, you know, for those officers and those lieutenants who had the courage to overturn this coup d'etat, who are now generals perhaps, or who have been, you know, promoted to lieutenant colonel, who are now make part of the Joint Chiefs.
Truly, like two hands holding each other, the people and the military. And why did this happen, and how could Chavez have brought this about? Because it was really a great deal to do with Hugo Chavez. He appeared on the scene as a champion of the people in 1992. There had been, in 1992, because Carlos Andrés Pérez was a very extremely repressive president who had killed at least 3,000 people who spontaneously came out to protest the IMF kind of economic policies. From one day to the next, people went on the bus to go to work. They had to pay 20 times the fare. From one day to the next, a piece of bread cost 300 times what it cost before. This is outrageous. So people just spontaneously came out, and what Carlos Andrés Pérez did, he sent the troops in to kill them. So the troops were seen as something to be feared. Then when Hugo Chavez committed a fault against the Constitution because he tried to overthrow Carlos Andrés Pérez, and he failed, but he made history, because he said he would give himself in if he could give himself in front of the cameras. And the government stupidly said yes. So Hugo Chavez, you've seen the personality that he has, went onto the TV cameras and said, and he was handcuffed, and he said, "I take full responsibility for the deaths and of this failed coup, and I urge I think he said, "I urge the soldiers to put your arms down, because for now." Those were very famous words, "for now, por ahora." Mm? The next day he was famous, because never in the modern history of Venezuela had any politician taken responsibility over anything. He said, "I was responsible." So he became a hero. The kids would dress up like him in carnival. For 2 years he was in jail, and then, to the credit of Rafael Caldera, he was pardoned, and when he came out, he did a tremendous job. He I don't think he even had a car. He would use cars people would lend him, and he went all over the country campaigning on against corruption. Of course, you know the history. He won. When he won with nobody even believed, he just came out from the left corner, and he won these elections, destroyed Acción Democrática and COPEI, who were the two Tweedledum, Tweedledee parties that seemed to always govern Venezuela. Then he had promised many things, because the first thing he said was, "We need a new constitution." When he swore to be president, he said, "I swear by this moribund constitution, this dying constitution, because one of the first things he said, if you elect me, we're going to have a new constitution. The other one actually had been a transitory constitution that just kept on and on and on and allowed the corruption. So this little book became so important because it was not written up by lawyers. There was an assembly of people who were elected, again, another election to see who was going to be the Constitutional Assembly. And that assembly had representatives for the first time of the native peoples of Venezuela. Nobody ever paid any attention to the native peoples of Venezuela in political significant terms. Women, people representing the rights of children, environmentalists, campesinos, peasants, fishermen, all the different strata were there in that assembly. And the interesting thing about this constitution is that anyone who knows Spanish can read it. It is not in legalistic sort of words. So the constitution was really tremendous. Anyone who says that he is a dictator is because he's not read this constitution. Not only has his government brought about this constitution, but it has been a singular attention to the human rights, even of his opponents. So he's president. Now what does he do? Because they're tying him up. He wants to do all kinds of things. He said, oh, they won't let me, because every which way he couldn't find a way to make the reforms that he wanted. He said, I'll use the army. And of course, this is an army man. So it was the army out there, the army building sewers, the army helping people build houses, the army bringing, you know, the army has medical people. These medical people were going around the country helping, you know, examining people's eyes and helping all kinds of diseases and conditions. The army engineers were out there helping people. And so then, the army came to be seen as, hey, these are good guys. They're going to help me, you know, build a sewer in this neighborhood. Then there was the disaster, Christmas 3 years ago, of the most horrific natural disaster on the coast, where 50,000 people were lost, either killed or disappeared. Their houses, it was destroyed. It was just, I don't think we've had a disaster of that magnitude. Who was it that went in? Who were the heroes? The military. The military went in. The upper classes, however, were quite upset because the Americans, they wanted to come and rescue. And Chavez said, no, thank you very much. We can do it. So that was the first, misunderstanding or, I don't think we like this guy because the Americans couldn't come in. But Chavez allowed the Cubans to come in. Now, why did he do that? He did that for very specific reasons, not for ideology. The Americans wanted to come in with bulldozers, and he and his engineer says, we can't bulldoze this. This land is too, we don't even know what's there. Whereas the Cubans said, we'll give you emergency, very well-trained emergency personnel and medicine, and that's what they needed. So the Cubans came in immediately. The elites, the Cubans, communism, you know, totalitarianism, all these kind of nonsense that they come in. Without, of course, everyone knows that Cuban medicine is fantastic. Now, what we see in Venezuela is the discrediting of the elites. Elites are supposed to lead. Elites are supposed to be the best of whatever resources or intelligence or whatever, are supposed to lead, open a way for others to follow. The Venezuelan elites have not wanted to do that. They have turned onto themselves. They are an elite amongst themselves because they really don't care if anybody's following. They're not doing anything for the people. And this has happened and has been a solid pattern of their type of work for the last 40 years. Pedro has told you about the school, this one school that he went to, and he saw with his own eyes what happened there. When you look at educational policy, you will find out that Chavez has increased fourfold the budget for education that has lain there for years without anyone touching it. You know what they did almost 30 years ago? They decided that because there were so many children being born and the schools couldn't cope with it, the schools would have turns. So some children would go to school in the morning and other children would go to school in the afternoon. That meant that half of the children of the country were out in the street playing, heaven knows what they were doing, half the day. It wasn't because of climate. It wasn't because of some educational idea about how this should be good for children. It was because they didn't want to invest in schools. The schools were crumbling. Hugo Chavez has increased the number of schools. There are 3,000 Bolivarian schools. It has changed and done a magnificent reform of the educational curriculum, which has laid there for years. It was so decrepit that it was incredible. And he's done the same thing in each one, in health. He's done it in justice, the justice system. When he came to power, 75% of the inmates had not been sentenced. 75%. Now it's 43%. He came to a justice system whereby the judge sentences, but the judge also investigates. There were no public prosecutors, and he has changed this. Now, of course, the justice system is the hardest one for him, because you can't change the justice system without changing the lawyers and the judges. And the lawyers and the judges have all been accustomed to the corruption of the past. But there are some good things happening. Things are not as bad as we think. First of all, there were important consequences to the military coup and important consequences to the oil coup in January and December. A direct consequence of the military coup was the strengthening of the Bolivarian circles. The Bolivarian circles are circles that sit down and study this constitution. The Bolivarian circles sit down and study what the law means and how communities can find what their resources are, and they present a project to the government, because this is a participatory democracy, and this is what Chavez says over and over again. An important consequence of the military coup, or I should say of the return of Chavez, occurred even in Chavez and amongst his people, his governing people, because they realized the power of the people, that really and truly the people had engaged with them. They were in awe that they were brought back because of the power of the people. And so what happened was that the people themselves realized their own power and ran to join these Bolivarian circles so that they can become participants with politics, with the decisions that affect their community, how they can do things for themselves and go to the government and get certain things, but really most of the time it's they who call the shots. The other thing that did happen was the huge weakening of the opposition. It seemed formidable at first, because you thought, well, the opposition has all this money. This is the financial, the industrial elite that's against him. But they discredited themselves. What Carmona did was, well, the decent people who were in the opposition, who didn't like Chavez or X, Y, and Z, but were not fascists, were horrified with what Carmona did. And so they didn't become Chavistas, but certainly they stepped back. Then a direct consequence of the oil coup, which happened months later, was that the tactics of the Coordinadora Democrática, which is the opposition, was reviled by the very same middle class that thought that they were saviors. Why? Because they practically destroyed the economy. $7 billion U.S. dollars in U.S. dollars were lost to the Venezuelan economy. It contracted by 17%, and inflation went up 30%. This happened in January, right after this coup. This was amazing. Well, people are not idiots, you know, and the people realize this. This is what they've done. They've destroyed the economy, and they haven't given up. Okay. The elites are discredited, but the people have discovered their own power. You know, just before the French Revolution, a very famous edict happened. Someone wrote this letter, and it was pamphlets. You know, these revolutionaries would always write pamphlets. And it was written by the Abbé Saget, who was an abbot. And it was a letter to the king. And he says, in a very fine, wonderful letter, he says, you know, Your Majesty, if this terrible tragedy should happen, that all the dukes and all of the barons and all the aristocracy should tomorrow morning appear dead, France would go on because the butchers would be there and the constructors would be there and the teachers would be there. And, you know, and he ends up saying, you know, France would, you know, be fine, saying you guys are superfluous. Well, that was a very powerful pamphlet just before the revolution started in France. Something like this has happened in Venezuela. It happened in PDVSA, which is the oil company. Oh, the top management wouldn't work. It was a lockup, you know.
Thank you, Rita, for an inspiring talk. It's a real